this duel right here in America.
Ah, yeah. That's so good. I thought at first that we were going to do individual recordings with each of you, but we might just do
I think we could do sort of a round table thing where we ask questions and get perspectives and maybe play off each other a little bit more. I think that would be fun. You are listening to Animated Indulgence, the explicit and opinionated podcast where grown men talk about cartoons. Each episode, we'll pick apart, analyze, and dissect an animated series or movie.
Warning, there will be spoilers, even potentially for shows and movies that are not the topic at hand.
We may watch cartoons, but we don't watch our language. Discretion is advised.
We're joined here by Saga Media and Winged Regent, who are fans of Yu-Gi-Oh! For a very long time. How you guys doing? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us. I'm doing great right now. It's an honor to be on the podcast with you guys.
That's a lie. It's not an honor, but I do thank you for being on here.
Okay, it's if I have to tone it, it's very fun and appreciated.
Fair enough.
It's appreciated and fantastic. But yeah, thank you guys for having us. It's a blast so far.
Yeah, well, we wanted to get the perspective of someone who actually enjoys this, because it would be just, it wouldn't be fair to trash on the show all the time and not see the good in it. So we wanted to talk to you guys about that. Do you remember what originally drew you to Yu-Gi-Oh! And what kept you coming back from war? What kept it from being just, you know, this thing you watch to something you actually really love to indulge in, something you're passionate about?
I remember for me, what originally drew me into Yu-Gi-Oh! Was, in one hand, it was like the start of the plot, because we had the whole start of Duelist Kingdom, and then we had, you know, Pegasus doing his you know, whole thing with the Millennium Puzzle, trying to get his hands on it. And it, for, you know, for some reason back then, the plot actually drew me in, and it also felt like it hit at just the right moment, because it came out around the time when Pokemon was getting big and anime was starting to really hit its stride in America. And when Yu-Gi-Oh! Came out, it kind of hit that perfect point where people of that age were looking for something to collect. And you had Yu-Gi-Oh! The anime and then the card game. And when that both kind of came hand in hand, it kind of pretty much hit that sweet spot where I was like, oh, you know, we're looking for these things to collect. There's this anime about a card game, and then there's this actual card game, you know, based on the anime. And that was one of the main things that kept me going in and in with Yu-Gi-Oh! And then after Duelist Kingdom, I felt the series really hit its stride with Battle City, the second season. And from there, kind of just kept me grabbed on, at least through the first series of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, it's cool to hear you say that, because I actually talked a bit about, in the main recording, about how I feel that the card game and the anime are kind of like the circular thing that are pushing each other. One really, I don't know how one would survive without the other. That's interesting to say. You hear you say that they kind of fed each other in a way.
Yeah, because it in particular, it had to do with its timing, because like every generation has something that they're collecting, you know, either like, you know, tops or, you know, marbles or like little trinkets
Pogs.
Here and there that they're collecting here and there.
Pogs.
You know, Pogs. Yeah, exactly. And
today is fidget spinners. Topical.
Today's fidget spinners. Back then, it's like those little finger, you know, skateboard things. Like, every generation had something that they were collecting at one point. And Yu-Gi-Oh! Struck where that generation was looking for their card game. Like, you had Magic the Gathering. The Pokemon card game was there, but it was mostly about the anime and the actual video game. But Yu-Gi-Oh! Was the first of its kind, at least in America, the first of its kind where you had a card game in an anime, and so you had a card game built around an anime, and then people were collecting the cards because of that relationship at the
time.
There's
no, the extra layer isn't there. In Pokemon, there's a card game, but it's cards based on the stuff in the show itself. And Yu-Gi-Oh! It's cards based on the cards in the show itself. I get it. There's like a extra layer of connectedness. That's kind of something I didn't really think about. What about you, Saga? How did you get
it? What I think about it, what originally drew me in was when I get home from school back in middle school, I believe it was, I'd come home, turn on Kids WB, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Started playing, and that's when I was supposed to do homework, but I'd be watching TV at the same time, of course. And I started watching it, and I enjoyed it, and I just got hooked because I liked the story itself. I got really engrossed into each of these characters and their struggle. You know, Kaibo, you know, was someone who was super confident. He was someone that had no challenges. Oh, he had tons of challenges, but his entire world got struck down and it was destroyed, and he had the resolve to fight back up. And then we have Pegasus going nuts, taking everyone's souls, and it's like, what's going on? What's this guy? Why is he doing this, you know? And then Yugi, with his dual personality, his at first, or his split personality, and, you know, you had the weak side of him, but you saw that he also had a strong side, which we put his more confident and darker side, and, you know, found out later it was another persona, but going on, that creates his own struggle, you know, internal. And that right there was a good thing that just kept me coming back more and more. But another thing that worked well with this is I had a lot of friends that played Magic the Gathering, and I was always interested in that and played a little bit with them, and I'd use someone else's deck because I couldn't afford cards. And so it felt like something I did in the real world was in this anime, and then later on, these cards, we could actually get them ourselves. And it's like, oh, this is cool. It's like, you know, you saw these cards in the show, and you want to get them for yourself in your life. And so it's kind of like a fun collecting tangent, kind of like a wing was talking about earlier. That right there was a really good pull, because the people that liked playing playing Magic the Gathering started to switch to Yu-Gi-Oh! So it kind of made a new change at the table. You know, when you're at lunchroom, you guys had something to talk about, and that was presented in front of you. And it wasn't like it is now, where internet accessibility wasn't as strong. Back then, I had dial-up. I couldn't go on and watch any anime or any TV show I wanted to go watch. I had to watch what was on TV, and nowadays, I don't even watch TV at all. So it was a good placement where it was and at the time. So that's probably why I'd say that really got me, but the story itself and the ability to do what they're doing, you know, in a sense, is what really kept me coming back for more.
Nice. Like a kind of a you had no choice, and it had a real world counterpart.
It was just perfect placement in the real world.
It's
and
a perfect time in your life. I think we talked about how, or at least I did, about how some of these shows, you get them at the perfect time in your life, and it's just like, you can't really explain it. You're at a very informative time in your life. And it just
yeah,
sticks
I definitely
with you.
That's...
Yeah.
Very hard.
I also want to piggyback a little off of what Saga mentioned about the plot, and add that the plot in Yu-Gi-Oh! Was a lot more nuanced than a lot of children's shows or anime at the time. Because a good example, as you know, Saga implied, is you look at Kaiba's character development. You know, Kaiba was Yugi's rival, but Kaiba was not entirely made out to be straight up the villain. Like, he was never really the villain of the whole series. Like, he was the rival, he was the obstacle at points, but he was never one-to-one the villain of any arc in particular. Even in Duelist Kingdom, when he was frankly at his worst as a character, he had a reason for what he was doing. And it was understood what he was doing. He was doing for his little brother. In anime and shows at the time, we had Pokemon, where we had, you know, Ash and Gary. You know, Gary, he wasn't exactly the villain, but he had no redeeming quality about him whatsoever until 3-4 seasons down the line. At that point, and then Gary, you know, turned around. But until then, he was always just, you know, a complete utter jerk to the lead character. In Dragon Ball, we had, in that time, Vegeta. And, again, Vegeta didn't have a redeeming quality about him until, like, 3 or 4 seasons down the line as well. Like, he was the villain in the first arc of Dragon Ball Z. You know, you had Raditz, then you had Vegeta and Nappa. And then after the Frieza arc, we started to see a little more of Vegeta. You know, where he had this pride about being a Saiyan, and he was willing to put that aside to, you know, confront Frieza. And then he actually was willing to put his, you know, his hat on Goku's table, as it were, when Goku confronted Frieza. In Yu-Gi-Oh!, Kaiba, from the get-go, he had that one, pretty much the one moment in the first episode where he was the villain for what he did, you know, with the whole thing with the Blue Eyes White Dragon. And then immediately afterwards, we got established the lead villain of the arc, and we saw a little bit more of Kaiba right then and there about Pegasus trying to take over Kaiba Corps, and you know Mokuba being pretty much on the run because of Pegasus. So the plot was a little more nuanced than a lot of the shows that we were exposed to at the time, and I think that also helped with Yu-Gi-Oh, that it dealt with a more mature subject matter in its own right at the time.
That leads directly into the next question I was going to ask. Do you guys think that the heavy drama in the show makes a difference in how you perceived it? I know a lot of children's programming is comedy or is light or is more direct in how the conflicts are addressed. Do you think how Yu-Gi-Oh! Did that differently than the norm made a difference for you?
I'm going to say yes, definitely. Because I'm more of a person that likes a show that takes itself more serious. I like a show that's not too lighthearted and friendly. I like something that's really, it really pulls at your, you know, emotions or feelings. And yeah, the drama was good at many points, but at times it went a little too far, like with friendship and such, which is like, don't have to use that all the time. But nonetheless, I like the series as itself. I really enjoyed the art style back then, and I still do. And I thought the audio really did well with it. Like in the fights, you know, the battles and stuff, because it made me feel like it was really real, you know, and came, you know, thrown in your face. FMA and Death Note are another two ones I could compare that to. Those as well, the high tension, the high energy, and they keep themselves serious. And I mean, yeah, FMA does have some silly jokes and plays on itself and as lighthearted, but it doesn't lose the focus of how serious this matter really is. And that, to me, really keeps me trapped in that show. And I don't come outside that bubble, just like with so serious, and I really like that, because when they get too crazy or silly or comical, because then it's like I start to lose my interest, I start to fade out of that trapping bubble, if you will. And that's one thing that in Yu-Gi-Oh! Here, they did keep it pretty serious. There was lighthearted moments and silly ones, but a lot of times they did keep things serious enough where I wasn't starting to fade away.
I would say in the long run, it certainly helped in regards to the show's perception, the drama in the show and the background story behind it made a reason for everything to happen. Like we can sit here and make the jokes, you know, about, you know, they're deciding the fate of the world over a children's card game. But at the same time, it gave a focus for whatever, you know, everyone was doing to some degree. And like every character had their own personal story. Like, every participant in, like, Battle City had their own story going into it, between Yugi doing it for his reasons, Marek doing it. Obviously, Marek was the one trying to take over the world with the children's card game. You know, Joey Wheeler doing it for his reasons. So it really helped along the lines of keeping the show grounded and not just some random, you know, collect-a-thon here and there, you know, of an anime or just some, you know, slice of life with a card game in it. It helped give a focus and on a very long-standing focus, particularly with the first series, regarding what was going on in the background, what these characters are doing, what was their purpose in each, you know, arc. So in that regard, it helped create an investment in the characters, because every single character had something that they were fighting for. Every character had something that they were shooting for. Whether you like them or not, you know, they had a goal and a purpose in each arc, and that was something that I think helped Yu-Gi-Oh! As a whole, particularly early on. And I think in a way that was one of the things that hurt one of the later series in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX for me personally, because while the characters had goals, all the goals felt rather like, I hate to say this because again, children's card game, but they felt rather childish or, you know, minute compared to what Yugi and Kaiba and, you know, Bakura were going through, and Marek was going through in Battle City, and Bakura was going through toward, you know, the later parts of the series. And it felt very, very petty in comparison. And eventually that picked up in like season 3 or 4 of GX, but early on it just felt like, oh, we're following these, you know, high schoolers learning how to be master duelists, you know. And in the first series, there actually felt like there were more stakes involved in, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Straight from the start. And I think that's something that really helped with the first series as opposed to some of the later series.
You brought up something really interesting that I hadn't noticed until now, but I completely agree with you, is that the characters have a very clear motivation. As silly as some of them are, as over the top as some of them can be, there's no doubt about why they're doing what they're doing and what their goals are. So I can definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, like, the goals aren't, like, muddled or anything. Like for just taking from Duelist Kingdom, Rex Raptor was a champion duelist. He wanted to go to Duelist Kingdom to prove that he was the best. Weevil Underwood wanted to end Yugi, you know, and the quote-unquote myth that is, you know, Yugi Moto. You know, so he does the underhanded thing of taking the Exodia cards and throwing them into the ocean, you know, right from the start to hamper Yugi's chances. And then his first duel in Duelist Kingdom is Yugi. He loses, but that was his goal. His goal right there was to try to get rid of Yugi. You know, you had Joey Wheeler, who was doing it for his sister. You had Pegasus, who was doing it for the Millennium Puzzle. And then we find out his actual purposes at the very end of Duelist Kingdom. So even though Pegasus comes off as the villain, he even had his own reason for doing what he was doing. And as a result, he comes off as much more of a sympathetic villain by the end of it, in my opinion. Then you had, you know, obviously Yugi doing it for his purposes because he wanted to stop Pegasus and, you know, save his grandfather's soul because, you know, what Pegasus did with the Millennium Eye. And then you had Kaiba's purpose with, you know, Mokuba. Pretty much everyone in Duelist Kingdom had a particular reason for what they were doing, whether it was simply, you know, to borrow from another, you know, children's anime, whether it was simply to be the very best like no one ever was, or if it was to save a family or a relative from sheer, from you know, dire straits and from imminent danger.
Well said. I only have one question left. Mojo, would you like to take the next one, or Airhammer? Do you want to do the next one? I guess Airhammer wanted to do his last.
Mine are all jumbled up. I start coming up with new ones. I even have a point of discussion.
Go ahead and ask.
This has to do with our comparisons and influences section. Do you feel that this seems like Mortal Kombat with cards?
Mortal Kombat with cards. In what way?
Well, there's a Shadow Realm and a tournament and
a handful of people on a rinky boat.
Yeah. And you have a guy that steals souls, Shang Tsung. Pegasus.
Lots of little ties and influence of small sorts. Like, I swear to God, Pegasus is sweet tooth.
The Paradox Twins could be Sub-Zero and Scorpion, for all we know. I don't know. I see a connection.
I never really thought of that before, but
I mean, kind of the same. I will say that the as a minor point is that the whole Shadow Realm thing, for the most part, I believe is a US dub only invention. Like, there is bits of Shadow Realm in the original, but because it was handled by 4Kids and they went around the act of censoring certain things here and there, Shadow Realm is loosely mentioned in the original, and most cases of Shadow Realm are usually that, like, legit cases of murder.
Okay.
Yeah, like, there are particular scenes. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Because I saw bits and pieces of the manga, and most of the times they mentioned, like, the Shadow Realm in the series, and I remember the reflection over there, it was a form of death.
Mm-hmm.
On that, from what I remember from the manga side.
Yeah, like, there's one duel in particular in Battle City where the duelist is a magician, and his deck is magician-based. And the concept of the duel is they have their legs chained to the platform, and as their life points go down, there are these two little buzz saws that cut across. In the English dub, they made the buzz saws look like energy blades, and when they touch the person, they would quote unquote send their minds to the Shadow Realm. In the Japanese version and in the manga, those buzzsaws were actual buzzsaws, and they were threatening to cut the duelist's legs off from under them.
Wow.
Like the magic trick.
Right.
Yeah, like the actual magic trick. I'm going to saw your legs off.
Yeah, we did some research into, or we did some talk about Season 0, and it's like, holy shit, no wonder that shit's not a kid's show.
Oh, no.
That stuff's more on par with Full Metal Alchemist or Trigun or Cowboy Bebop type maturity than Yu-Gi-Oh!
forget Mortal Kombat. We're talking about Saw at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty harsh.
I guess I could ask my question. I wanted to ask, what do you guys think of the link between the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime and the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game? And do you think one could survive without the other and vice versa? Whichever one.
Well,
wants.
I guess I can start off then.
Yeah, you can go.
I would say that the anime, I mean, it blatantly cheats from the rules quite a bit. I mean, there's a bunch of silly stuff. They summon cards you can't summon. Their life points, you know, start out differently in multiple seasons. And, all right, okay, so fine. Let's say that the anime was playing by a different set of rules than what we have in the real world. In the anime, certain cards may actually gain new abilities or be played in a bit different way. And it's like, ah, the continuity kind of fails there on it. But they work hand in hand. I'd say if you didn't have one or the other, they would have fallen a lot sooner. Well, sooner. They haven't really fallen. Yeah, they're still going pretty well. But nonetheless, they strengthen each other. They're really good synergy for one another. And because of that, it pushes it forward. The momentum, it just gives that momentum, just keeps pushing. Look at Pokemon. It's the exact same comparison in my eyes. If you just had one or the other, I think it'd be a lot weaker and it wouldn't be so strong. And the momentum in the fan base just would actually, not be there.
I actually mentioned this with Pokemon as well. And I've mentioned that I really feel that Yu-Gi-Oh! The card game and anime are kind of... They are. They're a circle. They cycle on each other. One can't really... They push on each other. But the Pokemon we talked about as well is like a... Maybe three-wheel. Like a three-prong. They have a video games as well. That's the biggest prong, obviously. But what do you think, Ringed?
I think when it comes to Yu-Gi-Oh! The anime and Yu-Gi-Oh! The card game... At first, they were, like, loosely linked, because, as Saga mentioned, they blatantly cheat in Duelist Kingdom. And that's a consequence of Duelist Kingdom being made before the actual card game. And then, when the card game came out, they made the anime follow the card game. So, from Battle City onward, the actual rules of the card game apply to the anime. And I think that really helped establish that cycle. So now the anime helps with the card game. You see certain deck archetypes in the anime that could be used in the card game. And then the card game comes out with a structure deck based off of that. And then the card game moves on from there. And then they feed off each other from there. It's to the point now where if you watch any of the recent Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, the card archetypes and deck archetypes that are being used in the anime are viable decks in the modern card game.
That's,
you know, like they're
quite cool. I like that.
Yeah, like the decks in the anime now are very much a deck you can use in, you know, card game. You probably won't do well in tournaments for obvious reasons, because the tournament decks are just, you know, another step above. But these are decks that are, you know, 40 to 45 cards with the proper, you know, balance of monsters, spells, and traps, with, you know, the right effects that synergize off each other perfectly. And these cards now actually work well between anime and card game with very little tweaking, if no tweaking at all, needing to be done, as compared to the starter decks that came out for Yugi, Kaiba, Joey, and Pegasus, you know, at the very beginning of Yu-Gi-Oh! So I do think that the anime and card game feed off each other in a way. I don't think it's as tight of a cycle as you can make it out to be. Because I still follow the card game, but I don't follow the recent anime series as closely as I used to. But I still follow the card game. But as a general rule, I do think that they do feed off each other to some degree.
Fair enough. Want to do the next question, Air? Or Deus?
I got one.
Okay, yeah, go.
What do you think kept Yu-Gi-Oh! As a 20-year franchise rather than just a fad?
I'd say the ability to, you know, watch anime and then go home or go with your friends and play the card game yourself was a good starting point. Later on, though, with anything, you can't keep it standard. You can't keep it, you know, boring. You have to keep changing, upgrading, and manipulating your content. So by them refreshing the game by making different kinds of summons, new cards, new card designs, reprinting cards, but, you know, in different ways of look and art, it was a way to refresh the series. That way, it just kept pushing forward. So, going back to your previous topic,
going into the anime, you actually saw different versions of the same card, going back to what you mentioned, that other magician person. Because his magician was actually a dark magician, but he was a red color versus, mm-hmm. like, Yugi's purplish color.
Yeah, the purple one.
Yeah, so I mean, that kind of just show of the different print versions of the cards, and the card game also got versions of the... there. But yeah, by adding, like, the Synchro Summons and the... was XYZ, and then...
Yep.
Oh, what's the latest
Pendulums.
One? Which, that's where I've kind of stopped in the card game. As after that point, it's like, I don't know how that works, and I haven't spent the time to even look into it. Because it's like, okay, this looks like very, very mind-raping. I don't have time for this. But nonetheless, that constant changing is going to keep people coming back for more. If you do the same thing over and over and over, and there's no new content, your viewers, or not your viewers, your players, they leave. Because there's nothing new to do. It gets boring. It gets dull. It's stale. But to keep rejuvenating it by adding these new content, these new ways of playing the game, and new strategies and new techniques. So
by adding motorcycles.
Games on motorcycles.
That's just silly.
That's just silly.
It happened at one point.
I abandoned on that point.
Yeah, 5Ds, was it? I think it was 5Ds. But
I think so. I stopped watching at that point.
Yeah, like, by then I had fallen out as well. I had stopped around GX, but, yeah, I think what Saga mentioned holds very true in regards to Yu-Gi-Oh! They kept rejuvenating it with different cards, different, not rules, but different, ways to summon, different ways to do different things. The anime kept rejuvenating itself, you know, with each series, not like they added different things to each series. Like, to 5D's credit, they advertised the card game on motorcycle thing, but it doesn't play as big of a role as the advertisement makes it out to be, which, frankly, you know, it's kind of silly they advertise it so heavily. But, but in the long run, I think that really helped with Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, a good example as a counterpoint would be something to the extent of Pokemon. I read like this long rant or essay on the Serebii forums and this guy reposted it on the GameFAQs forums for Pokemon, that there was this long rant about the pretty much the drop off of the Pokemon series. And it's because the Pokemon anime follows pretty much a flowchart. It's Ash does well. Ash gets the prerequisite required to enter that Pokemon League. Ash encounters rival. Ash encounters, you know, female love interest / companion through the series. Ash goes through the series. Ash encounters Team Rocket. And then, or the equivalent of Team Rocket, Magma, Aqua, you know, whichever team it would be for that arc. And then Ash reaches that series Pokemon League, but Ash never wins. Through 20 years of Pokemon anime, he has never won a Pokemon League except for the Orange Islands arc, which is technically filler because Orange Islands doesn't exist. So, throughout
which
that...
Which is funny because those episodes are some of my favorite, on a side note.
Oh, right, yeah. Ash actually... The fight between Ash and Drake, I believe it was, with his Dragonite, is probably one of my favorite fights in the entire Pokemon series. You know, and the non-conventional way of how they handled the gym battles, you know, seemed like it led to the inspiration of how Sun and Moon handled the gym battles in the actual video game some 17 years later. But the thing with Pokemon is that when you watch the anime in Pokemon, it goes through a flowchart where Ash never wins the Pokemon League. He always goes back to Pallet Town to reset himself. He leaves his Pokemon there. He leaves with Pikachu. And then all of a sudden, Ash feels like he's back to this, you know, state of he doesn't know what a coughing is, even though James has used a coughing for 30 years by this point. Like, he legit pulls out a Pokedex to scan a coughing in the recent series. And it's kind of like, why? You've seen this Pokemon for years. You know, and I feel that Yu-Gi-Oh! Does well to avoid those pitfalls because it's giving us new lead characters, new threats, new cards, new cast, you know, every time they want to rejuvenate the series. And I feel that it helps avoid the pitfall of the Pokemon anime where people will fall out of the Pokemon anime but will still play the games because the games are genuinely still great you know, monster collecting RPGs.
I will say something, the though.
Anime
that I will say that, well, I agree, Pokemon is guilty of the reset thing, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Is avoiding that. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is still very much guilty of reminding us and having characters re-explain shit that he should know. Like, if we've watched 150 episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh! Or whatever, he shouldn't be explaining what the fucking the Circle of Binding Light or whatever does for the millionth fucking time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they always re-explain the cards every single time.
Excessive re-explaining,
That is just as bad as the Pokedex. Ashina's Pokedex scanning and coughing, in my book.
I think to a point, yeah. I think it is to a point it's like, you know, hammering it over your head, you're kind of like, I know what this card does, you don't have to re-explain it. But it also plays off of, I think, how in, like, tournaments, you know, in Yu-Gi-Oh! They re-explain cards that you should know. Like, everyone, like, because of how old the card is, everyone should know Spellbinding Circle. But in tournament, you know, standards, when you play almost any card, you do well to explain the card effect. So I think it kind of emulates that, and it's also to make sure the audience is still aware, you know, because of 150 episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh! You might forget what Spellbinding Circle, you know, does.
I know, and in 150 episodes of Pokemon, you might forget what a coughing is. Or new 10-year-old that is just getting into Pokemon for the first time.
Right.
See, that's another way you could look at it, because what do you think their audience is? Do you think they're still reflecting, you know, are we still directing our audience, our viewership to newcomers? Are we pointing to people that's been here for the past 5-10 years? Or are we constantly just refocusing on new people, get more new blood? I mean, that could be something we're looking at as well.
Right, and I think, honestly, that works in Yu-Gi-Oh!'s favor a touch, because the later series, as they keep resetting, they deal with, you know, a few more mature themes in how they do things. Like, Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, for what it is as a series, gets surprisingly very, very dark. Like, there's legit consequences, and there are very legitimate, you know, strifes that the characters go through in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX. That I would say rival the first series in regards to scope. You know, particularly when it comes to, you know, Zane or, you know, Ryo, you know, in the Japanese version, and his character arc. Like, his character arc goes through some twists and turns that are shocking, to say the least. But in Pokemon, it's always Ash. And I think that's, you know, to make that comparison closer, I think that's what hurts the Pokemon series. It's always Ash. It's always Pikachu. You know, going through the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. He never wins the league.
Is what makes the Pokemon Generations miniseries so fucking good. Like, they stepped away from always following. It focuses more on the anime version of the game universe instead of the actual anime. And instead of focusing on Ash, or in this case, Red, like, it'll do his little adventure, and then the next episode will be like, here's what Blue was doing. Oh, here's Gold's venture through Team Rocket's base, and like it's so good.
The Pokemon Origin series that came out was very nicely done, and in, like, that regard.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Has more in common with the way Pokemon Origins is structured than the original Pokemon anime. I guess that's where I was going with that point.
Yeah, and I would agree, in particular with, you know, the large cast of characters each getting their own focus. Like, with Pokemon Origins, it follows the game storyline more, and it shows that you can handle the game storyline in anime form while keeping it, you know, in this... you can still tell it in a way that children can understand and relate to it, while also making it look great and presented well enough that teenagers and adults can get behind it, if not only for the nostalgia of seeing the game that they played 20 years ago in anime form, but also seeing the adventure of this different hero and how he handled it. And guess what? By the end of it, he wins the Pokemon League. You know, and if you follow the manga, he pretty much captures almost the entire first era of the Pokedex himself. You know, and it gives like this triumphant story of, this is what the protagonist was going for. He is a Pokemon master. With Ash...
Yeah, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Does that a lot more along the same lines. Like, you'll have the first one follows Yugi, the next series follows someone else, the next one,
Yeah, and eventually they win their respective... They do their respective goals, they win their respective tournaments, you know, and it, you get to see the journey of how they go from, you know, dueling... I guess you could say, like, dueling beginner to what they are by the end of it. And Yugi, you know, in the first series in particular, Yugi has a much wider, you know, character growth arc from season one to season four, you know, as a whole, as opposed to just, you know, simply winning tournament after tournament, which the final season of Yu-Gi-Oh! Really goes over very well to show his character growth.
Great answer so far.
Yeah.
Ehrhammer, you want to take this home and ask your question?
Of the first season, what did you feel was the silliest thing that you saw, whether it's part of the plot, the design? Like, what ultimately made you want to stop watching? And I guess this can extend on to the further series if you've gone beyond the first.
Was around the time, it was after the Oricalco series season.
Same.
After the what season?
The German guy. His arc, I guess.
Yeah, there's an arc later on in the first series called the Seal of Oricalco arc. It's a filler series that's not in the manga. It's an anime thing.
They went to another tournament, Ishtiel, and Kaiba was being hacked, and it just felt like... It felt a little repetitive at that point, and I really wasn't invested. I wasn't really energized. Previously, it was great. We had a lot of energy. We just kept pushing forward. And here, I was like, I have no reason to be invested in these characters. I don't know why you're so upset. There's no... Why is this guy having vendetta against, you know, Kaiba? And it's like, previously, we had reasons that we felt emotionally distraught when things happened. Here, it's just like, okay, it's a tournament. Whoop-de-freaking-do. Why do I care? There's no excitement about it. There's no energy. There's just, okay, just going through the motions. And to me, that was where I kind of stopped. And they also started doing reruns. As I mentioned, I was watching it back on TV. So you saw one new episode every Saturday morning, and you watched the reruns on Monday through Friday. But on that Saturday morning, you got up early to go see it. Rerun, I was just like, no. And when they got to that there, it killed it for me. It's like, this was so much fun and great. And it was just a giant letdown. It was a disappointment at that point. And that's where I'd like to leave off on that.
Mm-hmm. For me, I have to say it was actually around the exact same point. The Seal of Oricalco's arc did nothing for me. If anything, like, I liked the filler arcs that they did introduce. Like, Dungeon Dice Monsters was kind of neat. I liked, you know, I liked the arcs in Yu-Gi-Oh! Where they deviated from the card game and they did their own little spin on things. Dungeon Dice Monsters was kind of cool. I like I forgot the name of the arc, but the arc where they're all in like the online game where it's not, they're not dueling per se, but it's like they're moving like the piece. Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, like it played like the anime played off like a little bit of like the Duelist of the Roses PS2 game, and I thought that was kind of cool.
That game was amazing, by the way. I should have mentioned that in the podcast, and I feel bad that I didn't. That game was my very first PS2 game.
Oh, wow.
Duels of the Roses was the very first PS2 game I ever owned. And I played
I still have my copy somewhere around here of Duels of the Roses.
I gave my copy to Spader for his collection.
Nice.
Oh, wow, that's nice of you.
But, like, they had, like, these little intricate little arcs where they didn't play by the rules. There was one arc where it played off, like, an RPG. Where, you know, Yugi and them had, like, these pieces of armor, and they were playing it like it was an actual role-playing game online, and that was being run by pretty much the board, you know, of Kaiba Corp that was trying to screw over Kaiba's, you know, investments, like, if I'm not mistaken. And those arcs were neat. The Seal of Oricalco's arc threw a wrinkle in the whole series regarding, like, this card that had, like, this mystical power over the duelist, where if they kept using it or they kept feeding into it, they could get consumed by the card and they became, like, these evil entities. And there was really no investment in the characters, per se, because they kind of just started. What was that?
Is it like Yu-Gi-Oh! Meets Lord of the Rings? Like, the One Ring?
I think, like...
You said there was one card that if you... Like,
Well, there's multiple copies of that same card.
Okay, never mind. I thought it was like a unique, specific physical copy of it. I didn't realize it was one specific card that there was 100 copies of. Never mind, I misinterpreted. My bad.
And no, it's all good. Like every person on the villain side of things had that card in their deck. So there's like no real investment to those characters except for like the guy second in command who, you know, did
Raphael.
Who did like a heel face turn, you know, somewhere in there, and then, you know, had his like little moment in between there. But the thing that really kind of hurt that series for me was when I saw Yugi get the Seal of Orichalco slipped in his deck, and he's having like this internal dilemma of, do I use it? Do I not? Should I use it? Should I not? Going back and forth I think it was a duel against Raphael, and he's going, should I use it? Should I not? And I'm sitting here watching this going, if this was Yugi in character, this isn't even a thought in his mind to use this card.
I think it was more of a fight between Yugi and Yami in reality.
And then it became, you know, more about Yugi and Yami because Yami opted to play the Seal of Orichalcos. And then when Yugi broke free of that control, he pretty much surrendered the duel. And that kind of drew me out of it to a point where it's like now Yugi's in this slump of, like, he pretty much became a non-character for the next, I don't know how many episodes. Like, at that point, Yugi was just non-responsive. He was completely out of it for
an empty shell.
Yeah, like, he was a complete shell for, like,
Children's
the next
card game-induced coma.
But, like, it wasn't even a coma. Like, he was still moving around and standing, but it was just, like, always, like,
trauma.
Yeah, like, he had, like, the dark cloud over his head, like, head down. It's just, like, dude, you know, and like, and given the stakes that were up in going on in that arc, it felt almost out of character for Yugi to catch himself in that slump. Like, it to me, it didn't ring true to what Yugi was as a character. Like, even, you know, bringing up that it was Yugi versus Yami as a struggle, I could see him having that struggle, but not having that much of a drop off because he couldn't really hold back from the struggle. You know, and seeing what, you know, what twisted versions his monsters became when the Seal of Orichalcos attached to them. You know, like, I could see him being shocked, but not to the point of being a complete husk. And that's what Yugi became for that part of the arc. Especially considering that this arc doesn't happen in the manga, and Yugi goes through his own struggle with Yami, you know, during the final season, and the struggle was handled much better, you know, when we see it play out in the final season of Yu-Gi-Oh! And knowing that this arc doesn't happen in the manga, and his anime only, just kind of had me sit there and go, this doesn't make sense. I don't agree with how they handled this. And it completely zapped me out of Yu-Gi-Oh!
You know what? I'm sure it's great material for the abridged series, though.
I don't think the abridged series has gotten to that arc just yet.
Oh, but he has. He had the duel with Raphael and he lost.
Oh, okay, so they have gotten into that.
Sometimes, like, I can't be sad that this shitty mid stuff exists because we have the fans that make the great stuff out of it. I'm not gonna try to hide it. I wasn't a fan of Yu-Gi-Oh! And I'm probably not gonna be all that enthralled in it. And I'm glad it exists for the people who like it. I'm more glad that it exists because now I can watch Abridged.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed watching Abridged last night. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it gives material for like even non-fans, like fans and non-fans, to appreciate at least the more comedic side. Like, you can't take anything like that too seriously, and that applies to any fandom. You have to be willing to laugh at it. You know, like Dragon Ball Z Abridged is fantastic for that sort of thing. Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged is equally fantastic because how many things you can laugh at. You know, you're deciding the fate of the world, children's card game, you know, card games on motorcycles, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so that helps with it. But yeah, after the Seal of Orichalcos, I dropped off of Yu-Gi-Oh! For a while. I tried to get into Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, but because the English dub never finished GX, I couldn't find myself getting fully invested in GX. You know, like, it felt like those two series had a point where I dropped off, went back on, because I dropped off from Orichalcos, skipped it, and then went into the Grand Prix arc, which was season 3, you know, of the main series. Uh-huh. And then in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, the Society of Light arc happened, and every time I heard Chaz say, quote, "You're going to see the light, the Society of Light," I cringed.
Is, side note, were these shows running congruently?
No.
Okay. So, it's a successor thing. One show ends, the next one picks it up.
Right. They finished...
You just happened to be watching them congruently.
I wasn't watching them concurrent. Well, no, you're right. When I tried to restart, when I tried to get back into main series Yu-Gi-Oh! Again, it was concurrent because they were doing reruns of main series Yu-Gi-Oh!
I just wanted to make sure. Because I was interested in if they ran side by side and like a sister series type thing. Like there's times where Star Trek ran, you know, shows from Star Trek ran at the same time and they crossed over and shit. Or what was the other? Stargate did that as well with, you know, Atlantis. Anyway.
Right.
Side thought.
Yeah, because what happened was, in particular, Yu-Gi-Oh! Was on Kids WB, but each Yu-Gi-Oh! Series was treated as a separate series. Mm-hmm. You know, so Yu-Gi-Oh! Was on Kids WB, and then after Yu-Gi-Oh! Finished on Kids WB, Yu-Gi-Oh! GX aired on Cartoon Network. And then after Yu-Gi-Oh! GX finished, they didn't finish the English dub. Like, I think there were like an arc and a half from finishing the English dub of GX, but it just ended. Like, I don't know if it was ratings or something happened, but Yu-Gi-Oh! GX just ended. They never finished Yu-Gi-Oh! GX in English. And then Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds aired on Nickelodeon, if I'm not mistaken. So it was a mess. It was a mess of licensing rights. Yeah. You know, in particular, what didn't help was 4Kids was going under during the time of Yu-Gi-Oh! GX. Like, 4Kids was starting to go, you know, belly up as a company. They lost One Piece. That went to Funimation. They lost, you know, their rights to Sonic X. They lost... They're starting to lose all their assets because, you know, finally, you know, it was starting to bite them, you know, how they were treating the anime series. They lost Pokemon by then. You know, Pokemon USA grabbed the rights to Pokemon. That became its own thing. So, because 4Kids was starting to die out, it became a mess of licensing rights. And... you had Yu-Gi-Oh! Airing reruns on Kids WB, Yu-Gi-Oh! GX airing on Cartoon Network, and then when GX finished, 5Ds was airing on Nickelodeon. And you couldn't keep up with the series in English.
I have a question, because I haven't actually seen the Series Zero, if you will, the one that was in 1988. Mm-hmm. That was more closely based on the manga. And this goes to Wing. What was your thoughts about that reflected to the first season?
Oh, wow. Season Zero is... I think if Season Zero aired first instead of Duelist Kingdom, I think it would have done a little more of a disservice... Not a disservice to Yu-Gi-Oh!, but it would have created a wider disconnect. Because even like so far as like the character designs are different, a lot of the, you know, character personalities are different between Duelist Kingdom and Season Zero. Season Zero is a lot more like grounded and a lot more brutal in a, you know, some of the really aspects show. Of the character. Yeah, okay. it's totally different. Yeah,
I think the major thing that would have been different if they started with Season Zero here. I was thinking about this last night after we recorded. If they had released Season Zero here as the first season instead of Season One, I don't think the show would have took off like it did. Right.
Because this is a lot darker.
It was a lot darker. It wasn't really aimed at kids. It wasn't a kids show, right? It was more like Cowboy Bebop, Trigun, you know, that Full Metal Alchemist, maybe that type of.
Yeah, I could easily see that.
It was more of an adult thing, and yeah, it would have had an audience. Maybe there would have been fans, but it wouldn't have blown up. It wouldn't have been a sensation of a bunch of kids wanting to buy cards, and you know, begging. Because it would have been a different time slot. It would have been on, like, Adult Swim, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of Saturday morning cartoons. If you think this out, like, I think it was a gigantic, horrible mistake story-wise, well, telling-wise. Because there's so many important things that happened that are implied to have happened before the show starts, season one, that is, that would have been nice to know. So it was a horrible decision storytelling-wise, but incredible decision, like, marketing.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think one of the things that you can argue is that if you leave Yu-Gi-Oh! In its unedited format, like, completely uncut, no edits or anything, I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Itself would find itself in, like, an Adult Swim format, because there are so many things that were changed by 4Kids in regards to dialogue and scripting and card designs that eventually found their way to the real card game, you know, that were altered. But Yu-Gi-Oh! Season 0 is just on another step above that. Like, you know, the Duelist Kingdom arc and onward plays up, you know, Yami's, you know, mind crush or whatever it is, where he does that. They play it up as, you know, he's clearing their mind. But in Season 0, it's far worse than that. Like, it's he is legit making a point to give the person a mental collapse.
Yeah, driving them to insanity or
making
a mental vegetable.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he blind a few people as well?
Wasn't there, like, a story about him torturing someone, Deus?
Yeah, pretty sure there was.
Yeah, there was. There was one. There was one where I believe he caught... This is from the manga. I'm not sure if... This is from the manga. I don't remember if this was in represented in the anime, but, like, there's a arc where these guys were being perverts to Taya, and were getting upskirt shots of Taya, and were harassing her, and blah, blah,
that
blah.
That alone would have made it into the original show.
No, it was not at all. Like they reference it in main series. Yeah, like, they reference this happening in
not
like...
Not the upskirts.
They come close to it. Like, they dance around calling it an upskirt, but you catch, you know, you get the drift of it.
Yeah.
Like, what they're trying to do, because 4Kids, you know, they're subtle, but not that subtle.
I recall the scene.
Yeah.
They changed it from that to a simple robbery.
Yeah.
Cut out how much.
Yeah,
that's
but
what I thought.
Get,
it was like someone attacked them, someone stole something from them. Yeah.
This
set
guy,
her
like,
up. That's what happened. It's the scene where she's flashing back to... She got a note saying that they were going to make a dancing studio, but it was really two thugs. And in the American dub, they are just interested in robbing her.
Right, right. And then in, like, the season, you know, the very first manga, you know, it's, you know, they're out there to do more than rob her, let's just say. And that was, like, I think one of the first appearances of Yami. Like, if not the first appearance. And... he, like, verbally dresses them down. He pretty much takes them down. And then all of a sudden he does the mind wipe. And that's when you get the gist of, it's not a mind wipe. He's giving them a mental breakdown and a collapse right then and there on the spot as a way for them to atone for what they're doing. And that's when you get the gist of, this is a little darker than anything that comes after this arc.
Yeah,
because every time after that arc, it's played up as more of a, you know, I freed his mind and I cleared it of his, you know, of his evil thoughts. No, what you're doing is you are breaking their mind and leaving them a shell.
We talked about it a little bit last night, that maybe there were, that season zero is in its officially in its own continuity, and like an augmented version of that is actually what happened in the main continuity.
I would honestly say that it applies even in the manga. Because even in the manga, they take parts of the first arc of Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, obviously, the Millennium Puzzle, the dual personalities, how that whole incident with Taya is referenced in the main series. Joey and Tristan being bullies to Yugi at the start was referenced in the main series. You know, that sort of thing. That is there, but not all the finer details, you know, of the series.
Like, it's assumed that some version of the stuff that happened in Season Zero happened in the main continuity, just not as a violent or dark or suggestive or adult as it happened in that continuity.
Right. And, like, even the drawing style changed. It seemed to reflect that. Like, the manga drawing style switched to more of the anime's drawing style as Duelist Kingdom approached. And Season Zero you know, has a completely different drawing style in the manga as opposed to the rest of the series in the manga.
Yeah, Kaiba's hair is different color. There's a lot of different design choices. Yeah. And
but, like, not even just the anime. Like, the actual manga, like, Yami looks completely different in the opening arc of the manga as opposed to what we see now. Like, Yami just looks like in the equivalent of Season Zero in the manga, Yami looks nothing like what we see him as. Like, he looks more like a psyched-out, crazed Yugi. Like, his hair is straight up. His eyes are, like narrowed and beady. You know, he looks like more like a crazed-out, you know, Yugi, as opposed to this tall, you know, adult version of Yugi that we see in the later series. But, you know, he doesn't get taller in the original, you know, manga for, you know, when he goes into Yami form. It's just like this psyched out, you know, bugged out version of Yugi. And even the characters reference it, like, you know, this pipsqueak, you know, just looks a little crazy or something. Like, they reference that. But he's still the pipsqueak, you know, in Season Zero. And later on, they switch it for him to actually be like, this is the Pharaoh spirit, so let's make his body actually change to accommodate it.
I had a random thought for a question for you guys. We mentioned card games earlier. You guys both seem to imply that you did play some of the actual card game, right?
Correct. Yes.
Has that led into a general love for card games or like for card games? Do you play other card games now? Have you transitioned into other card games because of Yu-Gi-Oh? Or do you still play Yu-Gi-Oh? I'm curious.
I still play a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh! Because I have a few friends that still do, and I just cut the decks, so when they come by or I go see them, you know, once every 3 or 4 months, I can play with them. But on the mobile game, on your mobile phones, there's a game called Duel Links, which is not too bad to play. And on Steam, they just released Legacy of the Duelists, which is pretty fun. And it actually goes through the different series arcs, and you play with those characters. Because some cards they have that are not actually there in the series. And Magic the Gathering. I can't remember which one I played first. I forgot which way it went, though, because it's been so long. I don't play as much, but I still do every now and then.
Yeah, I played Magic myself. I think I played Magic after all the other card games came out because I just wasn't interested in something that serious. I was playing Pokemon because it was a lighter game, personally. But lately, I'm really quite a tabletop gamer, so I really like some more obscure card games, personally.
What about you, Airhammer? Were you ever really into card games? We didn't really bring it up.
Yeah. In the main recording, I brought up that I had gotten into Pokemon cards at first. I was just on a big Pokemon high, I suppose, at that point in my life. For some reason, regardless of price, you know, to an extent, I felt that I had to own certain cards, and I tried to complete the first 151. And after a while, I just thought, why am I spending so much money on these things? Because, like, I look at a package of Pokemon cards today, you can get one of those typical little booster packs for like $1.25, and back then you'd be spending anywhere from $7 to $12 to get the same thing. And ultimately, you know, I sold the bulk of my collection for around $75, and I just regret the whole thing in the end.
That's interesting. That's a very
so you were more of a collector. You were more of a collector than a player, right?
Yeah. I think I only played 2 or 3 games overall. Mostly due to the fact that I didn't really have friends that were buying them, so we would be playing with my cards, and we didn't find it as interesting.
What about you, Winged?
For me, I actually started with the Pokemon card game, funny enough. That was like the first card game I remember playing, because I bought like this giant box that had like multiple booster packs in it, because I was so into Pokemon, and it had like a CD in it where it was, I think, Pokemon Trading Card Game Play It, and it was like this tutorial on how to play the Pokemon card game where you played against this computer AI character, and it taught you the rules, the ins and outs, and then at the end you actually dueled against played against the AI, you know, in a game where you got to pick, you know, your deck, they pick their deck, and then you actually played, you know, without any assistance, you played against the computer. And I felt that was, you know, a neat thing for, you know, back in like the late 90s, early 2000s. After that, I got into Yu-Gi-Oh! Because of the anime. And that lasted, I think it was from 2001. Because, yeah, I got in from the very first booster pack, Legend of the Blue Eyes White Dragon. And then I think it was either the Dark Crisis or Pharaoh's Servant set. That was the final booster pack I got in, like, the mid-2000s. And that was, like, the last time I actually bought Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I still have my decks and such and my cards here in the room. It's funny because the actual card tin that I keep my deck in is where I got my username, Winged Regent. There are these card tins made by Rook, and they had artwork done by, I believe the man's name was Ed Beard, and the artwork on my particular card tin was an artwork called the Winged Regent. And I kind of just took that as my online username, and that's where my name came from. So, and that was like, that's like now 11 years ago. But it, from there, I stopped collecting the cards. Like, I would buy like individual cards here and there, but then I just stopped getting the cards. I still get the cards from the weekly Shonen Jump because I'm subscribed to Shonen Jump's online, you know, magazine now. So I still get the every like few months I still get the cards from them. So I kind of have a mini collection of promo cards going. But from there, I got out of the card game in general. And then a friend of mine introduced me to Dueling Network, which was a Flash-based, browser-based version of Yu-Gi-Oh! That had every card up to date, and you could actually duel and play with people online using the actual cards, you know, on that browser-based service. And he introduced me to that, and then he introduced me to Dev Pro, which had the bonus of, it was, that one was something that you actually downloaded and you actually played with people over a netcode. And while Dueling Network pretty much had people who, you know, you had to rely on the person knowing the rules to get by because it didn't have checks and balances, DevPro was programmed like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Mobile games, like the DS games, the PSP games, that actually had, you know, checks and balances for the rules and was programmed to follow the rules of the card game. And that's where I kept up with Yu-Gi-Oh! From that point forward, where we would play that every now and then, and he would show me, you know, like the new cards and how Yu-Gi-Oh!'s changed from when I played it, because now my deck is completely not viable. Like, I still have my deck from 11 years ago. The card game has advanced way beyond my cards. None of my cards are viable to this day.
I have very similar stories to yours. I used to play Pokemon when I was very young. Like, when it first came out, I don't remember. I must have been, like, 10. Me and my buddies on the street would play for keeps on cards, but that started leading to, like, we would play, we would each ante up a card, basically. We were playing with ante.
Mm-hmm.
And we would play for keeps, and we would end cards. But we were 10-year-olds, and it would start too many arguments, and our parents, like, all fucking grouped up to, like, ban that shit. Like, no, neighborhood, no, can't do it. No fucking playing. No playing for keeps. Yeah, I played a lot of Pokemon as a kid. I've fallen out of it. I have not keeping up with that. But eventually Pokemon, my like for card games and video games at the time led me to a place at my local town. It was a game shop where people were playing Magic, and I learned to play there. And I played that game for years, probably a decade of my life, just playing. I played Magic all the time, every Friday night. We'd go play fucking days at school when we weren't doing classes. We were fucking either on our Game Boys playing Pokemon or in the cafeteria playing Magic. And to get us away from Pokemon at the time was a big deal. So, like, yeah, I have a big love for card games, and that's why this anime kind of... maybe it's just the first season, I know, but it doesn't really hold to a actual card game. It's really poorly done, so it's kind of disappointing that, but yeah. I never really touched Yu-Gi-Oh! Though. I played a couple games of it. It wasn't my thing. I don't know. I just was in love with Magic at the time. It didn't stick. I played Magic for years and years and years, though. Went to tournaments. I never did really well, but I went to tournaments. It was fun. I stopped playing though when I realized I can't afford this habit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That right there is a big part.
It's so expensive. It's yeah. But recently I have been more into what was it you called them? Deus. They're card games that are structured around, instead of buying booster packs and hoping to collect all the cards or buying them aftermarket, you just buy entire sets and you get the entire every card in the set, and you get to build your deck out of that.
Yeah, there's a few games like that. A few different companies are starting to use that format. I think the biggest player in that is Fantasy Flight with their Living Card Games.
Yeah, that's the term I was looking for, Living Card Games. And yeah, we also recently, both Deus and I recently got the Mega Man card game, Pixel Tactics card game, which is really neat, and it's, you don't have to buy boosters, you don't have to go out of your way to buy, you know, hunt down rare cards or anything. You get a whole set, and that's what you play with. It's more like a board game. When you buy Monopoly, you don't have to buy Monopoly booster packs.
Yeah, it's right. Simply a card game, no collectible to that.
Yeah, it's, yeah, exactly. I guess that's the point I'm getting across. I can't do collectible card games anymore. I just want the card games. And that's why tools like Magic Workstation... You mentioned earlier you had... What was it that you called it? That let you play Yu-Gi-Oh! Online with your friends? And you had the entire library of cards?
It was Dueling Network, which was the Flash browser-based one, which got shut down last year. And there was DevPro, which had its own internal drama, but I think it's still around in some form.
Yeah. For you, DevPro was to you what Magic Workstation was for me. I played so much Magic on Magic Workstation, and I used it to playtest decks. Because I would, like I said, I would go to tournaments with hopes of being really good at it and fucking maybe winning money. I did win some money from time to time, but nothing really giant. But, yeah, tools like that are incredibly powerful for playtesting. When you're talking about, like, building decks that are going to cost, like, $100... right, or $200, and you want to know that it's actually a good idea that and play test it out against different scenarios and different play styles before you invest the money in it, those tools are really, really good and powerful and helpful. But yeah
it was...
Go ahead.
I was about to say, it's always, like, a great thing when, like, technology, as the series advances... Like, you have the anime and you have the card game, and then you have to pretty much be local in that scene to get into the card game. And then, as technology advances while the series is growing, or even if the series is plateaued by then, you have online services to enable you to play online with friends without having to spend, you know, hundreds or maybe thousands of dollars on cards just to keep up with a competitive meta. You know, because of Konami doing, like, the ban list, like, every... I think 6 months they'll change, like, the ban list and what's allowed, what's not, what's limited to one per deck. And then you look at it and go, I spent $50 for this one card, and now you're telling me I can't use it because reasons.
Oh, you're talking, like, standard, man. Standard is a thing that they keep. It's a purposeful thing to keep cards rotating, keeping you new sets. And Magic,
right.
For people that don't know, there's different formats. There's the legacy formats, which are anything goes. You could play almost any card. There's different sub formats where, you know, you could only play cards from this date to this date. But standard is the three most recent, like, sets. As soon as a new set comes out, the oldest of those three drops off, and you're not allowed to use anything beyond the three most recent sets. And this is the most competitive front in Magic. This is the most the place where you get the most spotlight. If you want to go into Magic and be a competitive player and, like, be known for, you know, hey, I'm good at Magic and go to tournaments and win money, you want to play. You want to play standard, and it's made, and the structure of it is purposely made to keep you buying new cards.
It is. Yeah, like, for Yu-Gi-Oh, Konami, okay. So this is a weird thing that happened somewhat recently, and was one of the reasons why I kind of sort of fell out again from following the card game, but I still keep an eye on it. They have introduced, like, around a little bit after I stopped really playing and actually collecting, like, 06, 07, they introduced what they call the advanced format. So there's two formats, traditional and advanced. Traditional is that no cards are banned, but there's a limit and semi-limit list. Limited is one per deck, semi-limited is two per deck, non-limited is three per deck. That's the most you can have of any card.
Okay.
They introduced the advanced format, which introduced a ban list. Previously, the only cards that were banned were obviously the anime-only god cards, because while they made physical copies of those cards, they weren't playable in the card game. They didn't have the rules set up for them. You know, they were anime-only, you know, the rules for those cards.
Yeah.
They made an advanced format, which actually banned particular cards from being used in those decks. And as time went on, every few months or so, they would cycle cards in and out of the ban list, depending on what they thought was broken, what wasn't, you know, things of that nature. And what didn't help is that the anime, some of the deck types in the anime use cards in the ban list. Like, I believe Elemental Hero Stratos or Ocean, for instance, is like one of the big cards in Jaden's deck in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX. That card has been on the ban list for years. Huh. Like, you cannot see that card in a tournament because it's on the ban list. And it's also probably one of the more expensive single cards you could buy, because it's such a good card. But no tournament uses traditional format. Traditional format exists just to exist.
Oh, yeah.
Advanced format is the competitive meta. 100% of any tournament uses advanced Yu-Gi-Oh! Format.
It's the exact same thing with Magic. Like, Magic, I feel, is a lot bigger, so it has, like, a lot more tournaments to actually give shots at those smaller tournaments or styles, but like 99% of major events or draft or standard constructed, where you have to build a deck within the current three sets, or draft constructed, you draft a deck out of the most draft standard. I meant, god damn it, and yeah. Good.
Yeah, with Yu-Gi-Oh! There's just those two formats, and like, if you're using traditional, it's casual. Point blank, plain simple, traditional is casual. You're not playing a tournament under the traditional format. Every single tournament is advanced. And advanced format with Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that you have a selection of a whole card pool. Like, every card is selectable, but there is a ban list of cards that you can't use, particular individual cards. Like, they don't ban whole sets. Like, you know, it's particular, like, this card isn't allowed, this card isn't allowed, this card isn't allowed. Like, it's a strict list of, like, 20 or so cards, if not more now. And they'll cycle them in and out. And eventually what happened is, what's it called? They used to follow the OCG format, where you have the TCG, which is the American format, but then you have the OCG, which is the original or official card game format in Japan. And the ban list used to be 1-to-1, with some minor differences to accommodate for cards that were exclusive to one version or the other. Sometime a few years ago, Konami decided to split TCG and OCG. So now TCG and OCG have their ban lists come out 3 months apart from each other. And the TCG has, like, every 3 months or so is another ban list, while OCG is every 6 months, and as a result, it created a divide in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Game.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. I just wanted to point out that I didn't mean to cut you off, but you need the Bail saga?
I hate to say it, but yeah, something that I wasn't expecting came up. Is there anything else you guys want to say or ask before I have to drop?
No, we've got plenty of material. I've got way more than enough for this. Yeah, thank you so much, both of you, for hanging out and joining us. You guys are superheroes.